Today is Friday, March 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump's proposed cuts to U.S. foreign aid and the State Department, and the pushback from Congress.
And said to the people of Morocco that he was coming as a pilgrimage of peace and fraternity in a world that greatly needs it.
That was reporter Sabina Castelfranco on the coming visit of the Pope to Morocco. Also ahead, Britain's House of Commons has rejected for a third time Prime Minister Theresa May's plan for leaving the European Union. And we'll have a report on luminaries being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at a ceremony today in New York. It's all on today's International Edition. But first, we have on the phone line our diplomatic correspondent, Cindy Sain, to talk to us about President Donald Trump's proposed cuts to diplomacy and foreign aid budget. Welcome to International Edition, Cindy.
Thank you so much.
So what is going on with the cuts?
Well, we had Secretary of State Mike Pompeo trying to defend this, and we have to let listeners know that this is a budget proposal. So it's more or less a wish list by President Donald Trump and the White House and the Trump administration for the budget and cutting in some areas and spending more money in others. So as we've now seen, these budgets are not usually what actually ends up happening, because here in the U.S., the Congress has the power of the purse. But we had Secretary of State Pompeo defending the cuts to the budget, some $11 billion to the State Department and foreign aid. And we had Republican and Democratic lawmakers unusually united in saying, no, we are not going to go for these cuts. We don't want that to happen.
So, Cindy, how do those, like you said, budget proposals affect U.S. aid operations overseas?
Well, it does, of course, create some uncertainty for ongoing programs. And you had some Democratic lawmakers being especially critical of cuts to assistance to Africa, to like a 24% proposed cut to refugee funding overall, and some cuts to the global program to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. So lawmakers were saying that we really, you know, we don't want those cuts to happen. And you had the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Democrat Elliot Engel, describing the budget as dead on arrival. And you even had the Republican ranking member, Michael McCaul, saying these cuts, while well-intended, can really have unintended consequences, and they can actually prove detrimental to U.S. national security.
And Cindy, the Trump administration on those budget cuts is expanding a ban on U.S. aid to foreign groups that promote or provide abortions to include those who support others who do. So what was the reaction to that?
Well, we had more of a mixed reaction to that, with a lot of Republicans being very strongly against any sort of funding for any programs which might fund abortions. So there we had it among more sort of the usual party lines. And Secretary of State Pompeo, again, said that, you know, considers this a moral issue and was very strong on defending that as well.
And the budget sought to, there's this thing about countering what the budget, what he called Pompeo, China's increased aggression. He says strengthening systems to target Russia's growing threats. And there's something, a deal with North Korea, curbing its nuclear program. How did members of Congress respond to those plans?
Well, there again, there was a chance, especially for Democrats, to express their criticism of the Trump foreign policy overall, with some questioning about President Trump's summit with North Korea and saying, don't you hold Kim Jong-un responsible for the death of American Otto Warmbier and for other human rights atrocities in North Korea. So there was some back and forth on that. But you did have, the Democratic chair, Elliot Engel, saying, look, we need to strongly fund diplomacy, or as you mentioned, he said China and Russia are more than happy to step up and fill in the void. So I think that was a concern. And Pompeo said that he was well aware of the threat from China and Russia, but he said that the administration has to be mindful of what he called the burden for American taxpayers.
VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain, thanks for your input.
My pleasure.
Among the top stories trending in the world, hours after the government of Venezuela barred opposition leader Juan Guaido from holding public office for 15 years, he addressed supporters in Caracas. South Korea's President Moon Jae-in will travel to the United States next month for a summit with President Donald Trump. The U.S. holds constructive trade talks with China, and President Donald Trump overrules his education secretary and others to fund the Special Olympics. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Britain's House of Commons has rejected for a third time Prime Minister Theresa May's plan for leaving the European Union. 344 members voted against the plan and 286 supported it. EU officials warn today's vote moves Britain closer to leaving the Union without a plan. Donald Tusk, President of the European Council, called a European Council meeting for April 10th. The EU has given Britain until April 12th to let members know what it plans to do. Living without an exit plan could cause significant economic and trade problems. On Wednesday, Parliament voted down 8 different alternatives to May's plan for Brexit. The contention over May's plan centers on trade and the border crossing between EU member Ireland and British-controlled Northern Ireland. Local residents routinely cross daily without stopping. May has said she would step down as Prime Minister earlier than intended. If lawmakers adopt the plan she negotiated with the European Union. On Monday, lawmakers will have another chance to put forward their own proposals for leaving the EU. Pope Francis heads to Morocco tomorrow for a 27-hour visit aimed at building relations with the world's Muslims. He will visit the Moroccan capital, Rabat, and in addition to saying a mass for the country's small Roman Catholic population, he will tour the Mohammed VI Institute. Journalist Sabina Castelfranco covers Vatican affairs in Rome. She spoke with VOA's Kate Bond-Dawson today about the Pope's trip to a country with a very small Christian community.
In fact, it has a very small Christian population because 99% of the country is Muslim. So there's only about 40,000 Catholics, and nearly all of them are immigrants. But he does want to visit this small Christian community and thinks this is a precious opportunity. And he even thanked King Mohammed VI for his invitation to allow him to do this. The Pope issued a video message ahead of his trip and said to the people of Morocco that he was coming as a pilgrimage of peace and fraternity in a world that greatly needs it. So that is his objective. He hopes to go there. He has a number of events scheduled, and he hopes that this will be important also from Muslim-Catholic dialogue.
So what sort of reception, then, is he expecting? Is it looking like he's going to be getting a very warm reception?
It does look like he's going to be getting a warm reception. In fact, he's scheduled to celebrate a mass. He's also scheduled to travel to a migrant center that is run by the Catholic organization Caritas. He's also expected to visit the Mohammed VI Institute, which is an institute which oversees the training and the formation of imams. So he's really trying to reach out to the Muslims as well. So he's likely to be making statements both about Islam, but also about the peripheries and migrants.
Now, the Pope becoming Pope, Francis has pursued an expanding dialogue with the Muslim community. How is that working?
Well, it actually is working quite well. There's a very big mosque in Rome which has very good relations with the Vatican. Also, Pope Francis just last month went to the United Arab Emirates, and there he signed a document on peace and coexistence among religions. He really believes that he needs to make it very clear that Muslims and Christians are not enemies. They're just peoples that follow a God. Both of them follow a God in just in different ways, but they too are brothers. This is his objective. He wants to make sure that Muslims also understand that Christians need to be respected just like Christians must respect Muslims.
You are listening to International Edition on the VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's 1971 Mariner 9 mission provided early evidence that water once flowed on Mars. Subsequent exploratory missions, including those still underway, provided scientists with even more data that supports the idea that plenty of water streamed across the Red Planet in its distant past. Some of that evidence includes the number of dry riverbeds that have since been found scattered across the planet's surface. Scientists at the University of Chicago have written a study published in the journal Science Advances that suggests not only did rivers simply flow on Mars, but may have at times done so in powerful torrents due to persistent and substantial runoff. The study also found that this intense river flow continued much later into the planet's history than had been thought, and that the ancient Martian rivers were wider than those on Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
South African police sniffer dogs have been sent to parts of Zimbabwe hit by Cyclone Idai to help look for those who are missing and presumed dead. Survivors of the storm hope to find the bodies of their loved ones and give them a proper burial. Columbus Mavunga reports from Chimanimani, about 500 kilometers southeast of the capital Harare.
Let's go.
A South African police officer guides his sniffer dog in Ngangu, one of the areas west hit by Cyclone Idai in Chimanimani district, Zimbabwe. The area has been engulfed by a putrid smell which locals believe could be decomposing bodies trapped under the earth. 35-year-old Wanda Tom had his grandmother lost when Cyclone Idai hit the area on March 16. He hopes the sniffer dogs will help them find the 82-year-old's body so they can give her a proper burial.
Because they can help us to discover our relatives. Because I think here in our country we don't have those special teams that can trip the bodies or the covered bodies. We don't have machines to see that on this ground, under this ground, there's somebody who's trapped there. So it relieve all of us to retrieve our relatives so that we can bury them nicely. Although they are already, their bodies are buried, but it's better for them for us to take them and bury them nicely.
Almost all of the 330 people missing from when the cyclone hit Zimbabwe are from Chimanimani district. Ian Hoy is traveling with the South African police sniffer dog team. He says they will be in Chimanimani for 5 days to search an area with a radius of about 60 to 80 kilometers.
The devastation here, to be honest, is very bad. I think even if we were here for 3, 4, 5 weeks, it wouldn't be enough. But we're here for now, we're doing what we can, and we're going to accomplish what we can in the time that we've got available to us.
On the first day of searching, the South African sniffer dogs and Zimbabwe security officials say they have made progress. Zimbabwe army troops are expected to start digging for the bodies in areas identified by the dogs. The Assistant Commissioner of Zimbabwe's police, Ndofandaye Zajabun, is leading the recovery.
So far, the progress is very good. We have identified quite a number of places. We will dig up and find out whether we can retrieve some bodies underneath.
Since the cyclone unleashed muddy flood waters into villages, locals have used shovels, picks, and even forks to dig for their relatives' bodies. While there are no hopes here for survivors, the South African sniffer dogs will at least narrow the search zone for what remains can be found. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Chimanimani, Zimbabwe.
Ukraine chooses its next president in elections Sunday, with incumbent Petro Poroshenko facing tough challengers. Among the top candidates is former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko. However, both trail TV comedian Volodymyr Zelensky in the polls. Voters expect whoever wins to do something to reinvigorate the economy. With unemployment at close to 10%, it's in the rural village where the hardship is felt most, once the breadbasket of the Soviet collective system, but now struggling to stay competitive in a global economy. Henry Ridgewell reports from Podilsku, 140 kilometers southeast of Kyiv, where the local mayor is trying to stop the exodus of young people leaving the village.
Tradition runs deep in the village of Podilska. At primary school, rehearsals are underway for the national folk dance competition. Among the youngest generations, ambitions are undimmed. Youth is a powerful force in Podilska. In 2015, aged just 24, Artem Kukarenko ran for mayor of the village and won with 80% support. His manifesto was simple: to stop young people leaving. What advice does he have for the next president? Kukarenko says he should pay attention to the creation of new jobs. Everyone voices the same concern. The school's Ukrainian language teacher says most of her students leave after graduation. It's clear that people want more money, she says, and there is no vision for that in small villages. So that is why quite a lot of young people just go abroad. Nearby, Podilska resident Tatiana Lobchinska says people are talking a lot about low income and low pensions. Viktor Litsik, who heads up the local cultural center, says we don't have anywhere to work here. All the people have to go somewhere else. 70% of Ukraine's land is given over to agriculture, which generates $18 billion in exports. But Mayor Kukarenko says agro-industrial corporations are swallowing up family farms and jobs. What does the youth need today? A house, a decent job, which provides a decent salary, he says, which may offer them a start. The poor credit system that we've got is a huge burden, not only for the youth, but also for people who are better established. Kukarenko says the high unemployment leads to alcoholism and mental illness among some residents. It seems a bleak future, but for a dose of optimism, head back to school. Student Anastasia Rudenko says, I don't want to leave Ukraine, but I want to go to another city and then return here to look after my parents and look after my village. Her friend Yulia Shilova says, I want to go to the most polluted places in Ukraine, to the cities, and work on improving the environmental problems there. Big ambitions for themselves and for their country. But how can rural communities harness and keep their homegrown talent? Ukraine as a country faces huge challenges in the years ahead. For villages like this one, the biggest battle is survival itself. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Podilsky. Podilska, Ukraine.
News reports say an anti-stall system was activated on the Ethiopian Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet before it crashed on March 10th. The Ethiopian Airlines crash, which killed 157 people, was similar to the crash of a 737 MAX 8 jet in Indonesia in October that killed all 189 people on board. Investigators in Indonesia have also targeted their probe on the plane's anti-stall system. And Stevie Nicks, Janet Jackson, the band Def Leppard, and others are being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at a ceremony today in New York. The Associated Press, Margie Zarolita, has the story.
The Rock Hall inductions are always full of questions. Will Janet Jackson address the controversy swirling around her brother Michael? Will anyone from Radiohead show up? Will Joe Elliott from Def Leppard mess up his speech? Because according to him, that could happen.
Getting up and going, ah, how's everybody doing? Are you ready to rock? It's a lot easier than standing there for God knows how long, trying to acknowledge and hope to God you haven't forgot anybody. Show me, show me,
show me. The Cure, Stevie Nicks, The Zombies, and Roxy Music also will be inducted. HBO will broadcast the ceremony on April 27th. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
So far this year, more than 300 people have had measles in 15 states in the U.S. Almost half occurred in Rockland County, just north of New York City. County officials are now banning anyone who is unvaccinated from frequenting public places. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
Because of a measles outbreak that has lasted nearly 6 months, Rockland County, New York, has declared a state of emergency. Ed Day is the county executive.
Anyone who is under 18 years of age and is unvaccinated against the measles will be barred from public places until the declaration expires in 30 days or until they receive at least their first shot of MMR.
Public places include shopping malls, restaurants, buses, and trains. Police will not be asking for vaccination records, but parents can face a fine of $500 and up to 6 months in jail if they refuse to vaccinate their children. The outbreak is concentrated in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. The county executive says it's a matter of getting parents to understand how dangerous measles is.
Every new case is a roll of the dice that could bring on pneumonia, encephalitis, a swelling of the brain, or cause premature birth, which can even lead to kind of complications and even death.
And he says it's a matter of keeping those who can't get vaccinated safe.
What about the infants who are out there with mom and dad? My newborn grandson is an infant. What about the pregnant, those pregnant and those with compromised immune systems, like cancer patients and survivors? These are the people we need all to step up for.
Vaccine rates in the U.S. are still high. The CDC study found that 94% of children in the U.S. receive the first dose of vaccines that protect against measles, mumps, rubella, and other vaccine-preventable diseases. But vaccines that require boosters, including the measles vaccine, had lower rates of coverage. But some states allow parents who oppose vaccinating their children for religious or philosophical reasons to opt out. Vaccination rates in these states has dropped steadily. And as they have dropped, cases of measles have increased. Some parents wrongly believe vaccines can cause autism in children. Study after study, however, has shown that not to be true. Dr. Frank Esper, a pediatrician with the Cleveland Clinic, defends vaccinating children.
These vaccines are well shown to be safe. We have tested them. We have followed children who have received these vaccines. We know how safe they are.
Still, some parents remain unconvinced. Rockland County is offering free measles vaccinations in an effort to end the outbreak. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You have been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com and like us on Facebook. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, engineer, Nick Ivanov. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Enjoy your day.